Seattle workers are now saying they deserve what they're calling a livable work schedule.
This is really a fundamental issue around combating poverty.
Now, the city council is working on a so-called livable schedule law aimed at making restaurant and retail jobs more predictable.
When we require employers to schedule people in a fairer way or a more secure way, you end up with a middle class that actually is just going to be more secure and more stable, and that's going to be good for everybody.
From the offices of Civic Ventures in downtown Seattle, this is The Other Washington, a podcast on policy and politics from outside the Beltway.
Way outside the Beltway.
Far from the pundits and politicos who dominate the national debate, I'm David Goldstein.
And I'm Paul Constant.
And each episode, we'll be taking you on a deep dive into a single policy issue, explaining how it works,
how it doesn't,
and how conventional politics often gets in the way of implementing effective policy. Welcome to episode 5. Hannah, why don't you come in and introduce episode 5?
Me?
Yes.
Episode 5, Secure Scheduling.
Hannah Brooks Olson is the latest addition to the Civic Skunk Works team, and I'm going to step back and let Hannah and Paul conduct this episode because I'm a privileged member of the baby boom, so I've never had to live through this problem.
Goldie's hands are so soft.
So what are we talking about? What is the problem we're addressing with secure scheduling?
Well, you may remember me from the last podcast episode where I talked about working in minimum wage jobs and sort of the difficulty that face workers. But one of the things that we have noticed since the increase to the minimum wage is that it's not just about how much money you make. It's about what your life looks like in a minimum wage or a low wage job. And the lack of predictability in those jobs is something that is as pressing as the wages themselves.
I'm confused because, millennials just don't graduate straight out of college into good-paying jobs?
You know, we do not.
Wow, that's different.
I know, and not only that, we don't graduate into the kinds of jobs that let us actually be participating members of society. But it's not just young people either. Like, a lot of people work in low-wage and minimum-wage jobs. The average worker who makes under $10 an hour is 35 years old. And so these are people who are trying to have families, and it's really difficult to have a family when your schedule is being decided the day before you have to be at work, or when you don't know if you're going to have to work that night, or you don't know how many hours you're going to get. It makes it very difficult for people who are trying to support a family or are trying to go back to school or really do anything other than grind away at a job that, in addition to being really unpredictable, also doesn't pay enough.
And Paul, you Xers, you've never had this problem either, right?
I had this problem a lot. Before I became a professional writer, I worked exclusively in the service industry. And I did a lot of clopening shifts, which is when you close the cafe and then you go back in the morning to open the cafe, which at the store I worked at was 10 o'clock at night, and then you would turn around for a 6 a.m. shift. And so, you know, with an hour on public transit both ways, that was 6 hours. Then you get home and you have to eat, and that's another, you know, half an hour. You got to take a shower in the morning, hopefully. And it eats the time out of your life. There were some clopening shifts that I worked in the cafe where I would make a strategic decision to sleep under my desk in the back room rather than go home, because I could get, you know, 7 solid hours as opposed to 4 or 5 hours.
Why would you sleep under a desk when there's the office hammock?
Well, Goldie, we didn't have an office hammock at the Borders in downtown Boston the way that we do here at The Other Washington.
What was this, the Stone Age? And all that's why we here at Civic Skunk Works think secure scheduling is the next $15, and why we here in The Other Washington are taking the lead.
I'm Nick Hanauer, founder of Civic Ventures.
So why do you think it's important for workers to have secure scheduling?
The simple fact is that although many people care about fairness, people care about how robust the economy is a lot more. And, you know, just as a political matter, leading with fairness is dooms you essentially to failure by a margin of something like 2-1. People will choose growth over fairness. What we're doing with our secure scheduling effort is reminding people that these labor standards will actually lead to more growth, even though they are fairer standards too. If you care about building the most dynamic and prosperous and fast-growing economy that you can, these issues are very, very important. As I said before, a thriving middle class is the source of growth, not the other way around. People who are well-paid and scheduled in reasonable ways make great customers, great citizens, and great taxpayers. People who are underpaid and scheduled in exploitive ways are none of the above. And, you know, I prefer the former to the latter.
Seattle business owners already pay a $15 minimum wage, sick leave, and can't use applicants' rap sheets against them. Now, the Democrat-controlled city council is working on a so-called livable schedule law aimed at making restaurant and retail jobs more predictable.
I think it's very important for you to have a job that's not just, like, iffy about your scheduling.
There is a sense amongst some workers that they are being abused.
Councilwoman Lorena Gonzalez wants the very union-like ordinance to give workers set schedules a week in advance, with extra pay if late changes are made, guarantee at least 11 hours between shifts, and give access to more hours before new employees are hired.
I am Councilmember Lorena Gonzalez, one of the two council members that still represents the entire city, and I've been doing that since November. All of the studies indicate that this is first and foremost an issue that impacts women, particularly women of color, disproportionately than any other segment of our population. And that means that when we know that women are the primary caregivers for either a family member or a child, that having that lack of predictability in when you're going to work or how many hours you're going to work, i.e. how much money you're going to make, really has a devastating impact on the quality of not just that person, but their entire family and, frankly, our entire community. So, you know, there's a lot of studies about how that lack of predictability for a parent working also impacts the development of a child's growth and how well they do in school, how predictable their own schedule will be in terms of accessing preschool and going to preschool regularly. So this is an issue that is much more than a lack of convenience in terms of knowing when you're going to work so that you can do, you know, basic errands. This is really a fundamental issue around combating poverty, equalizing the playing field for women, particularly women of color, and making sure that we understand that this policy has an impact on the entire family, not just the worker.
At the beginning of the secure scheduling discussion in Seattle, you published an editorial in the Seattle Times about the scheduling golden rule. And I was wondering if you could speak a little bit about that.
What I did is put myself in the place of a worker and just imagine that I was trying to run a business where my workers scheduled me in the same way that we schedule workers today, where, you know, at midnight the night before a shift, somebody would send me an email and saying, sorry, I can't come in, or I'm sorry, I need twice as many hours, or I'm sorry, I need all my pay today and not in 2 weeks. And if you imagine yourself as a business owner trying to run a business like that, you quickly come to the conclusion that it would be extremely difficult to operate in that way. Likewise, scheduling people in this way, it's very hard to believe that somebody can operate a life being scheduled in that way. And if you can't operate a business in that way, you certainly probably can't operate a life. And therefore, it makes no sense from either point of view. And so, you know, I think it's pretty easy to apply the golden rule to scheduling, which is you'd want to schedule your workers in the same way you'd want those workers to schedule you. I think it seems fair and reasonable, and you know, we ought to be able to come up with a standard that reflects that.
We are here in downtown Starbucks. We're meeting with Janessa Roan to talk about secure scheduling. Hi, Janessa.
Hi.
I mean, assuming you were still working at P.F. Chang's, and assuming that you had a more secure schedule, a more predictable schedule, what would you
do with that extra time?
It would help me plan, like, my life. Because when I worked there, my entire life revolved around work. So any extra activities or classes, anything I wanted to do, I couldn't do. So if I had a set schedule, and especially if there wasn't the gap, that was probably the biggest complaint I had. Because if you come in, you might work for an hour, and they tell you they don't need you, and they send you home, you know? So it's like, I think to just know to work like a regular 8-hour shift straight through, it would give me so much more time to do anything and not have my entire life revolved around a job.
Workers in Seattle are tired of unpredictable hours and are asking city leaders now for help. And new at 5, Kyra 7's Natasha Chen was there when they asked city council members to force their employers to provide a more stable schedule. Natasha.
Councilmember Lorena Gonzalez said not getting enough notice affects women especially because they're overrepresented in these industries.
The status of part-time work is really turned into a bit of a loophole for a lot of employee benefits that you would normally receive. And so I think I suppose I inherently knew that that would be an issue. But what was surprising to me was the depth with which it is an issue. It is quite pervasive amongst part-time employees to be passed up for promotions because you said no thanks to picking up an extra shift or being retaliated against in other ways for not accepting more hours. And so I think there's going to be a real question for us on city council to really dig into what are those complexities around part-time employees and how can we craft a policy that's really going to fix it. The only other thing I would add to that is that it became really clear to me in seeing the literature that there's this, for lack of a better term, middle person that we're really not talking about, and that those are the frontline managers who get an incredible amount of pressure from owners to comply with what I think is an unrealistic quota for labor costs. And that really puts frontline managers, who are oftentimes incredibly underpaid themselves, that puts them in a really difficult position in terms of how to meet management's unrealistic expectations while also treating their workers well. And you know, we see a lot of time that these frontline managers want to do the right thing, but they're really between a rock and a hard place, and figuring out how to give them the tools they need to be able to do the right thing by their workers is I think going to be another critical thing for us to take a look at that I was surprised to learn about as I heard the research.
With the mid-level managers, one of the things we hear a lot about wages is if people want to improve their wages, then they should, you know, learn additional skills and they should want to move up. But moving up is often disincentivized because that looks like a really hard job for not that much more money. So could you see this policy possibly like incentivizing people to move up because maybe being a manager wouldn't be quite so much of a sticky situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think anytime we get people who I guess frontline workers to actually move into management, you start creating a different culture amongst management, and you start creating a culture that is really understanding and empathetic, frankly, to what it means to be a low wage worker or just an hourly worker. And so I think we want to be able to create some pathway for progression. And we see that through predictive scheduling, or secure scheduling, we could do that because the people who get more hours, if you are able to move from part-time to full-time, that is going to increase your chances of being able to be considered for a manager-level promotion. And that, you know, although those manager-level positions don't pay a ton, they certainly pay much more than what you're going to be making as an hourly part-time employee. And we want to be able to create those pathways to move out of those poverty jobs, low-wage jobs, into middle-class paying jobs and beyond.
Sejal Parikh, Executive Director of Working Washington.
So first of all, I guess why secure scheduling?
You know, one of the biggest issues when we started talking to fast food workers about raising the minimum wage, outside of raising the minimum wage, was that they didn't know when their schedules were coming up. They weren't getting enough hours. They were exhausted from openings, things like that. And, you know, from an organizational perspective, it was interesting because when workers were going to go testify to city council, sometimes they didn't get their schedules until Sunday, and there would be a city council hearing on Monday. And so, you know, even from an organizational perspective, figuring out when workers were working was really a big deal. And when we were rolling out the minimum wage, the next thing that our fast food workers and our baristas told us that they wanted to work on was secure scheduling.
So even to be a full participant in your democracy to help improve your working conditions requires secure scheduling.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, no matter what you want to do in your free time, whether that's advocate for your rights or have dinner with your family, you need to be able to know when you're going to be working.
So now other cities have tried to pass secure scheduling ordinances. Some have failed, some have succeeded. What makes the Seattle ordinance different?
You know, Seattle's been a national leader on passing worker legislation from, you know, pay sick and safe time to raising the minimum wage. And we know that we have support from city council members, from the mayor's office on secure scheduling issues. We know that it's extremely popular and we have a worker base that's ready to go and fight for this.
So specifically, what does this ordinance do?
We haven't seen a draft of the legislation. We know that the, you know, issues that our workers talk most about is access to full-time hours, so that, you know, when we hear certain right-wing corporations say, why don't you get a second job? Our workers will say, well, if we don't know what our schedule is, we can't. Right. Or why don't we have access to full-time hours at this job? And so, you know, access to full-time hours, knowing when you're going to have your schedule. One of our fast food workers told us recently that, you know, when she gets her schedule on a Sunday and she has two children at home and she's a single mother, she doesn't know how to provide care for that child. She doesn't know if she's going to be able to have dinner with that child.
So my name is Alana Greenberg. I work for Starbucks, and I'm a barista and about 2 weeks away from being a coffee master. The first time I worked for Starbucks, which was not in Seattle, we would sometimes get our schedule on Sunday to start the next day. And if you already had something on the calendar, a doctor's appointment, a social life, God forbid, you would either have to cancel whatever that was or find coverage. And finding coverage is nigh impossible because everybody's always scrambling for it and we don't have a good system. People come in sick because they know they're not going to get coverage, which is unsafe for everyone and awful. And it's not that they tell you not to call out sick. That's not what it is. It's not a corporate policy here. It's just, you know, you're not going to get coverage. You know, people are going to be upset with you, even if they understand that you're sick, because we all get sick. We know this. We're all human. But if you got your team winds up working a person short, you can feel it, especially when it's busy. We live in the 21st century. We should use the technology we have to protect the human interest side of it.
And what do you say in response to the business owner who says, it's going to shut me down. I need this flexibility. I can't possibly operate my business under these rules.
You know, the interesting thing about secure scheduling is it doesn't have to be bad for employers. It could be good for everyone. And so, you know, a few different pieces on this that I find extremely interesting is when we talk about flexibilities, that's what, you know, it's a frame that we can actually work with employers. And so a big piece of secure scheduling is technology. And right now, technology is being used against workers. So we have things like just-in-time scheduling and other, you know, other things that make it so that workers have to get called in just very last minute. Technology could actually be used to help predict when workers need to be in and how that can work for employers as well. And so, you know, a really good example of this is if you Google a restaurant, right underneath that restaurant, frequently you'll see the hours that they are most busy on any given day. And if Google can do that, so can employers. And there's a lot of ways that we can use technology for good and not for evil. And by good, I mean good for employers, good for workers, and good for our community. Another interesting thing is there's a Susan Lambert study on, I believe it was Gap workers, where they showed...
And we're talking about the store, the Gap.
The Gap, yes.
As opposed to some category of workers, which we'd call Gap workers.
I mean, I guess we could be talking about both, probably. So I think it was the store. But, you know, what that study showed is that overall, the hours that the store needed, that the employer needed, were pretty consistent, but the employees' schedules were extremely volatile across the board. And so there is a way that we can even that out and make it work for employers and make it work for employees. And so the interesting thing about this piece of legislation is this could be good for everybody. And really what it does is when there's change on anything, we know that people get scared. But we saw with the minimum wage, for example, that it's been really beneficial to the city. It's been beneficial to our economy. And with this, we know it's going to be the same thing.
A new proposal in Minneapolis would affect workplace pay and scheduling for every business in the city. It would require employers to schedule workers 4 weeks in advance and provide paid sick leave to everyone. Small restaurant owners are leading the charge against the Minneapolis City Council. A meeting at the Common Grounds Coffee Shop in South Minneapolis about the proposal turned into a shouting match.
It's affecting my ability to have flexibility in my schedule, whether it's for serious reasons or for fun. That's part of the reason we have this job.
Why does everything have to be about a penalty and such a one-sided penalty? What if the employee calls in sick? Are they going to pay us predictability scheduling because we scheduled them and they didn't show up?
We built our business model and that flexibility. Don't take it away from our employee. You know, the city is asking us to change the way we do business.
So Seattle isn't the first city to try secure scheduling. Where else has this been attempted?
Last year, California lawmakers introduced what they called the Fair Scheduling Act. And then also in 2015, in the city of Minneapolis, the city council introduced something kind of similar to what is being talked about in Seattle. And it did not go over great.
So why? What went wrong?
It's kind of complicated. So I called Jason Rathi, who is a business owner in Minneapolis, to ask him to talk us through what his experience was there.
Hey, my name is Jason Rathi, and my business is Field, the outdoor spaces landscape company. We're located in the Northeast Arts District in Minneapolis.
Can you tell me about the Minneapolis ordinance around secure scheduling?
Yeah, so what ended up being part of the problem was that it was never released as a defined ordinance in ordinance language. It was released as a set of bullet points, and it was just kind of almost leaked on their website. Like, it had no it wasn't organized around any kind of a partnership of kind of getting information and feedback. It was just put up on their website, and it was written in language that to most business owners, even made, I think, really good business owners, feel a little bit that they were assuming that all business owners were, you know, against their employees, which kind of created a lot of defensiveness right away.
Sure, yeah. It sounds like it maybe wasn't even necessarily the policies that business owners had a problem with. It was sort of the tone and the way it was communicated, and then also kind of the broader implications. Do you think other small business owners would have gotten on the same page if they had had a better understanding, or if they had sort of at the outset been made clear about what was going on?
I don't know that it would have changed it in terms of who would support it and who wouldn't support it. I mean, the same people that were, you know, vocally not supporting it, which would be the chamber and pretty much all business associations, you know, like here in landscaping, we have the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, you know, all of those, they're not going to support it. I mean, they're going to be fully against it. So no matter how it would have rolled out, those associations would be against it. But I think that they would have had a lot more ability to at least get some collection of voices for it, which I think would have rolled out a little differently.
In addition to scheduling and sick pay, the proposal sets out requirements for flexible schedules if workers have a childcare, health, or educational need. And the proposal says businesses would have to offer existing employees more hours before hiring any new or temporary workers. While workers have taken to the streets to show their support, businesses have expressed outrage. Tim McKee, the owner of the famed restaurant La Belle Vie, announced last week he was closing his restaurant in part because of this proposal. Like other business owners, McKee said the plan will be too costly, makes scheduling a nightmare, and puts Minneapolis businesses at a competitive disadvantage. Supporters insist the measure is not a done deal.
If you were writing an ordinance like this, what would you make sure other business owners knew?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. So I think the two biggest things that people, the business owners, are going to be concerned with is, one, their administrative, how much time it's going to take them to do, you know, to implement it. And so I think making that very clear of, we've really thought about making this easy for you. There's just a lot of things that come out of government programs that make our lives much more challenging.
Sure.
So anything that I think lets business owners know that, boy, we've made this as easy for you as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, even, you know, particularly small business owners that might have 3 employees and they're doing all of their own bookkeeping, all of their own scheduling, is to let them know kind of on a day-to-day basis or, you know, on a week-to-week basis, this is all it's going to take. And then I think kind of on an industry-by-industry basis, looking at how, why do schedules change and what's under their control? I mean, I think that ultimately when small businesses have a chance to take that on, I mean, small business owners are the most creative people in the world because we have to be every day. You know, and you talk to people, they come up with really amazing kind of solutions to it, and it doesn't end up changing how they do business as much as their first reaction to it.
Definitely. Yeah, it sounds like a smart rollout that involves a lot of solutions that allows business owners to come together and come up with those creative ideas could work really well. Because for you, you said it's working for your business. So this is something that you would support other business owners sort of thinking about and considering and figuring out a good way to make it work for them?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Because I think that it's a pretty big change to certain industries. I mean, it changes a lot. You know, a lot of things you hear people say is well, this is just the way it's done. And there's a lot of industries that the reason why it's done that way is just because that's the way it's always been done. And so sometimes it just takes a little bit of time for kind of the creativity to kick in and say, well, that doesn't mean that it has to be done that way.
Absolutely. Oh, that's great. Okay, I have one last question for you. So knowing when your schedule is, knowing that you have paid sick leave if you need it, knowing that your, you know, wages are at least livable is all very much what we think of as laddering up to a middle class life. How does providing secure scheduling to your employees like help them sort of achieve that, you know, that middle class ideal of a life that can be sort of lived outside of work and prosperous in addition to work? How do you see that sort of impacting your employees' lives?
I think part of it just comes down to creating a life that doesn't feel like a rat race. Feel like you're professional. Feel like your work is valued and that you have dignity. Because then that gives you the confidence to be able to start planning the rest of your life. You know, I think the essence of middle class is that you have an investment mentality. You look to the next 30 years and you start planning it out. But you need enough, you know, mental room to be able to do that. If you're being tugged to and fro, you know, every day, you're just not able to look ahead long enough to kind of have that middle class perspective.
Well, I definitely believe that these particularly exploitative scheduling practices are unfair. The larger point and the reason that citizens should unite behind reasonable standards is because if workers are treated better, it will be better for everybody in the economy. Obviously, it's very difficult to sell to a group of people who actually cannot predict how much money they're going to make or whether they're going to be able to afford rent or, you know, their car payment or whatever it is. And, you know, certainly as a business person and as a citizen, we want to create a scheduling standard that allows people to thrive in our community as citizens and consumers.
A lot of knee-jerk reactions to secure scheduling come from business owners who say it's going to be harmful for them. Can you make a case why secure scheduling works for business owners as opposed to against them?
The more risk a business owner can transfer from themselves to their workers, the better it will be for the business owner, at least in the near term and in isolation. And so in the face of any sort of increasing labor standard, businesses always say the same thing, which is they'll have to lay off workers or they'll go out of business or they'll move or whatever it is. And this goes for the minimum wage or overtime standards. And of course, many businesses are saying the same thing about fair scheduling. The simple truth, though, is that when we change the scheduling practices for everyone, well, people will certainly have to make an adjustment in how they operate their businesses. No one will be at a competitive disadvantage. I mean, these predatory scheduling practices work great, of course, if you're the only one employing them because your costs go down and your risks go down while everybody else's stay the same. But when everybody schedules workers in this way, then nobody's workers thrive and nobody has any customers anymore. And of course, you know, at Civic Ventures, what we're always talking about are solving collective action problems. And a secure scheduling labor standard is a great example of solving this collective action problem.
But won't some businesses go out of business if this secure scheduling becomes law?
Well, I mean, certainly some businesses will go out of business. I think the statistic is 85% of all startup businesses go out of business within a couple of years of being founded. And I acknowledge that there may be some businesses in our community that are predicated on exploitative labor practices and will not be able to make the transition. But the beautiful thing about capitalism is that there will be someone who can operate successfully without exploiting their workers, who will very quickly take their place. The simple truth is that, you know, adjusting to changing circumstances is what business people do. That's the core skill of running a business. And if you can't operate your business, which includes treating your workers in a slightly better way, then probably you need to find another line of work.
The Other Washington is a production of Civic Skunk Works. Thanks to our guests, Jason Rathi, Elena Greenberg, Janessa Roan, Lorena Gonzalez, Sejal Parikh, and our benevolent plutocratic overlord, Nick Hanauer.
This show is produced by Tina Knoll at Large Media, with help from Nick Casella. Our assistant editor and sound engineer is Shelley Goncharowski.
Find us on social media at Civic Skunk Works on Twitter and Facebook.
You can visit our blog at civicskunkworks.com, where you can also subscribe to this show. Or you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcast.
And thanks for listening.